Louise McSherry. Weekends from 9 on 2FM.
But now, the nation has been told to stay home, and we know that now, for the next 2 weeks to help tackle the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. Between constant news updates, WhatsApp messages, wondering about what you're going to get in the next food shop, trying to keep your kids sane, worrying about your parents, like, it's all a lot, and it can really wear you down. But now, Aisling Leonard Curtin joins us to discuss managing our mental health during a health crisis. Aisling, there is no doubt about it that people are anxious.
Absolutely. And as I say, people who've never experienced anxiety there before in their lives are experiencing anxiety right now. And, you know, with good reason, as my 90-year-old grandmother tells me, you know, because I was saying, I've never seen the likes of this in my life, Nan. You know, my nanny Curtin's who I kind of go to. And she said, well, Aisling, I'm 90. I worked as a nurse for years and said, I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime, you know. So I know this show is around how to be an adult, and that's, it's hard enough to be an adult in regular times, and this is just completely uncharted for us. You know, there hasn't been any other pandemic in 92 years, and of course anxiety is fed about fears of the future and around uncertainty and a feeling of lack of control. And I think that is more true now than it is at many other times in our lives.
And some people might be aware of their own level of anxiety, but some people might not have ever had to kind of think about this before. And there can be physical symptoms of this kind of stress and anxiety, can't there?
Absolutely. The amount of people who are saying, and myself included, is having these really random kind of crazy dreams that even if it feels like you're not having anxiety, it's kind of coming out in sleep, having digestive issues, bloating, just kind of feeling like a constant feeling of kind of being on edge, that tired feeling of like tired but worried. So feeling really, really tired, but not really being able to sleep, or having trouble getting to sleep, waking up early, and so forth are very, very common right now. And some people might even notice that they've got less of an interest in kind of social interaction or in their sex drive as they would do normally as well.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, I think for a lot of people, they're not getting any alone time because, you know, maybe you're living in close quarters with family or friends, but you may feel very alone in the context of this, mightn't you?
There's a lot of people who are feeling very alone, and I suppose that the thing is, loneliness is not based on how many people you're around or not around. So yeah, some people might feel very alone because they feel like, well, they're constantly having these conversations around the latest news update rather than actually looking at what's really going on. From people I've worked with kind of individually in groups, there's a couple of people who are finding it particularly challenging, people who either live on their own and they're not kind of getting to see anybody, or people who are at home, and that their family situation is challenging. Sometimes it can be because young children at home, I know you know probably a lot around that, yep, they're wonderful, a blessing and all of these things. And also it can be hard not having a moment to yourself either. And also I suppose some people might be, I suppose, given the kind of rents and everything like that in Ireland, there's also a lot of adult children who are living with parents, and you know, parents of adult children living together at the best of times is challenging, and in a situation like what we're in right now, it can be more challenging than ever.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that kind of, you know, talking about the news rather than having conversations about other things. We've never faced anything like this before, but we've also never faced a crisis like this, or any crisis really, out of this kind of scale, or even close to this scale, with the 24-hour news cycle that we are all kind of privy to now, especially considering social media and everything else. I presume that's not doing us any good. I mean, I was going to ask, but then I was like, that's a stupid question. But it's not doing us any good,
is it? It's not doing us any good. Yeah. No, and I think, you know, common sense tells us that. But as we know, common sense is not that common. So, you know, having push notifications on, checking things out, you know, on a constant basis is not going to do us any good, really, you know. So what would generally be recommended from a psychological perspective is to check the news once per day, you know, from a credible news site. Because I suppose there's two extremes. One is being completely caught up in the news to the extent that it's kind of dysregulating your emotions and finding and making it difficult to kind of have distress tolerance, that you actually can't really connect and engage with people anyways. The other end is like not looking at the news at all, or like not looking at what the HSE guidelines are around social distancing, and kind of getting caught up in this land of like, oh, it's not really that serious, you know. And either of those extremes are not healthy or helpful. So the middle path is, you know, check the news once a day from a credible news source, kind of keep up to date with what the HSE guidelines are.
And what about like, what if you're someone who checks, I'm talking about myself, what if you're someone who is just constantly checking in online, constantly, 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 and like, I know consciously that I shouldn't do that, but like, I'm not going to go cold turkey. I mean, that's just not, I know that I'm not going to succeed at that. So what's a good way to cut back if you're trying to?
to start is to look at, well, is there a cost of doing what you're doing? And I think if you're asking me this question, there's some part of you that knows that there's a cost of like constantly checking in.
There definitely is. And I can't imagine that there wouldn't be for anyone. I can't imagine anybody would be immune to kind of the cost of doing that.
Yeah. So what might be useful is just to tune into your body. What happens as you're kind of constantly looking at news? What happens in your body? But then also to imagine if you're watching a video of yourself as you're constantly checking news, what happens like the 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes afterwards? What happens to the quality of your connections with others, be that in person or online? And then I think you're right. Cold turkey is just kind of too much. And if we try and set a task that's too high for ourselves, we usually don't even start, or we do it for a short amount of time and we don't keep going. So when you're saying you're constantly, is it that you've got push notifications and the minute you see a push notification that you need to check it? Or
oh, no, I don't need the push notifications. My phone is in my hand.
Constantly.
Yeah, I'm seeking it out. I'm refreshing, refreshing.
So we may need to practice some phone distancing. So we're used to the phrase social distancing. Phone distancing might be useful for you and for many other people.
Well, this is it. I mean, and I know I'm joking because I am talking about myself, but I think that there probably are lots of people who are doing this right now.
Absolutely. And I can notice that I have that natural tendency as well where where things feel outside my control, I want to constantly know about all of them, because if I know like 1 second or a few minutes beforehand, it feels like I'm going to be able to change something. Whereas in reality, when we're checking that often, our mind can kind of go into emotional mind where things just become so overwhelming that we can't even problem solve kind of correctly or kind of find solutions. So I would say if you could do some phone distancing, that would be useful. So maybe even just track how often your phone is in your hand, how often you're refreshing. And then this would be considered in psychology is called graded exposure. So if you're trying to do anything that's uncomfortable rather than kind of going cold turkey, you gradually expose yourself to doing something different. So it might be that if you notice that you've got the tendency or the urge to pick up your phone, you might say, well, I'm going to wait 5 minutes before I pick up my phone to check this. And I suppose the idea then is during that 5 minutes that you do something that you enjoyed doing. So maybe spending some time with your young children or, you know, connecting with other people or going out into nature, getting some fresh air. And then after that 5 minutes checking, and then kind of basically building in that phone distancing more and more.
Sounds a little bit like when I used to work in retail. I used to make a deal with myself that I wasn't gonna look at the time for like, it would be say 4 o'clock, and I'd say, okay, I'm not gonna look at the time until 4:20, and I'd have to challenge myself and like try and wait until I definitely thought it was past 4:20 to look, because otherwise I was like obsessed. Like I was looking every 2 minutes.
It's a little bit like that. And I think the other piece is that sometimes then all the time it's like, I'm not going to look until 4:20, or I'm not going to look at my phone, but then we're just kind of thinking about
that,
it the
yeah.
whole time. So then it's not really a quality connection. So it's really around. So sometimes actually putting a timer on your phone so that you don't have to kind of constantly think, what time is it? Because that's kind of taken out of your hands.
So we've been told to stay at home, but that doesn't mean cutting off all connection with the outside world.
Absolutely not. And I suppose the thing is, it's self-isolation, not social isolation. And we are really blessed to live in a world that lots of things are available online now that weren't available online before. So I actually have to say I'm very proud of Ireland and being Irish. I think that as a country we've responded really, really well for the most part. And people are making things available online. Like there's online mindfulness classes, you know, do improv comedy as a hobby. They're making improv available online. So there's lots of things that are available online. So I think, are there classes, things that people can learn online? Also, can you kind of keep connected with people, even if you're having that tendency or that urge to just kind of keep to yourself? Can you reach out to others? You know, experimenting with things like video calls. I've had some clients this week, because all my clients are kind of moved online, that have been using WhatsApp video and people in groups using Zoom for the first time, and they thought they never could. They had the idea of like, oh well, I'm not techie, and then it's actually the look of elation where people can actually kind of communicate with the world in new ways. So I do think that this time of, you know, social distancing and self-isolation may give us the opportunity to find new ways of communicating, new ways of socializing. Obviously, once we're all able to kind of go out and do our thing and hug each other and everything again, that would be wonderful. Yet, how can we build in as much social connection? And that it's self-isolation for a medical reason. It's not social isolation.
One thing that you said there, which I thought was interesting, was that, you know, you just the idea of thinking, oh, I can't do that because I'm not techie. But I saw someone on Instagram yesterday, they had made made a blanket. And she was saying, you know, I can't tell you how much good it did my head to like learn a new skill and focus on that for a day. And so is that something that you would advise? Like psychologically, that's beneficial to us, I presume.
Absolutely. And I know for me, like making a blanket will be my worst nightmare, you know, but I think trying different things. My wife is fantastic. She's kind of just baking things and, you know, kind of just making brownies and banana bread. It's really wonderful for me, let me tell you. And for me, I'm trying to get back to kind of doing more writing and that again. So if we can do something creative that we can just kind of throw ourselves into, because there's a lot of creative pursuits that we can kind of let go. And if we're in front of a screen all of the time, that's going to wear on our energy. So if we can do things like making a blanket, baking something, maybe trying some new recipes, you know, there's all of these things that you may have said, oh, I'd love to do that, but I don't have the time. You know, most of us have more time on our hands at the moment because we're not commuting, or certain parts of our work schedule might be kind of gone to the wayside. So anything creative is really fantastic for our brain and our mental health.
I found, like, I know there was that colouring trend that happened a while ago, and I know a lot of people got a lot out of that, but I have found that actually that's been my favourite thing to do with my son this week, is the colouring. Yeah, there's something very satisfying and peaceful about it.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, the approach that I use is acceptance and commitment therapy, and we always say let experience be your guide rather than your mind, because sometimes you might think, oh, well, I'm not going to get anything out of that. That's not my cup of tea or what have you. And I was kind of joking about the blank, but I've tried knitting and it was all pearls for me, because I couldn't even do that.
Look, everything is not for everyone.
Not everything is not for everyone. But sometimes there's something that we haven't tried in a while, or we've never tried before, and we have a preconception around I'd like that or I wouldn't. So I would say let people's experience be their guide rather than their mind. So yeah, get out there, colour, you know, listen to some podcasts, some audiobooks, you know, check out some new videos, find ways to create. And rather than kind of your mind already predetermining what you like and don't like, give things a go.
I did see that Audible, the audiobook website that's linked to Amazon, have made a huge number of titles free for a while, which is great. So that's a good way to get into audiobooks. So let's talk about now kind of maybe potentially more serious anxiety, because there will be people who will have convinced themselves that they're going to get this virus and that, you know, it's going to end their life. So if you're someone who's having those very, very kind of difficult thoughts, what can you do to try and get a handle on them?
So I think one of the things is just even start by noticing that they are thoughts. A very popular strategy within acceptance and commitment therapy is to say, I'm having the thought that I'm going to die, or I'm noticing that I'm having the thought that I'm going to get this virus, or I'm aware that I'm noticing that I'm having the thought that I'm going to contaminate others, or I'm going to hurt my loved ones. And it's not to kind of say that the thought is true or not true, because I suppose the really challenging part, and I think this is what feeds into the anxiety, is that any one of us could have this virus for 2 weeks and not show any symptoms. So, you know, there's no amount of kind of, you know, look at the evidence and everything like that, because that side goes out of the window. But the idea is just to recognize the thought as a thought, and to recognize, you know, here I am judging, or here I am catastrophizing. And if you can kind of write down your thoughts, a really helpful strategy is to write down kind of all your worries and your thoughts, and then to cross out all of the judgments or all of the non-facts, you know. So then what you keep is what's actually complete fact. So the fact might be, I'm worried about this, but it isn't a fact that you're going to die or you're going to contaminate others. You know, so it can be really helpful just to kind of get those out and externalize them, because sometimes when these thoughts are running around in your mind, and I suppose as well, it's to be careful that if you have a loved one who's saying these things to you, you know, the natural tendency might be like to say something like, oh, you shouldn't think that way, or there's no reason to think like that. But sometimes that can be invalidating for the other person. So what's actually more helpful is to kind of say, look, it's a really natural kind of thought to have given the circumstances we're in. It's so different than anything we've ever been in before. And at the same time, you know, what happens when you buy into that thought, when you kind of completely get fueled by it? Does that help you engage in actions that bring you toward who and where you want to be, or further away? And very often it's further away. So the best thing we can do is recognize the thought, come back to our values around like create, don't contaminate. I love that, you know, and how can we stay connected, keep people safe, but at the same time be aware of those thoughts without fueling them.
Well, before I let you go, if you are concerned that you're not coping, what should you do? Because I think that there is a fear of even contacting your GP, because we all know that healthcare professionals are busy, but presumably you should take action.
Absolutely. So a GP is one way that you can go. Also kind of looking into counselling or psychotherapy. Some businesses will have employee assistant programmes. So that will kind of give you an idea of and when that happens, you're allowed kind of maybe 6 sessions or 8 sessions. So that might be covered. I suppose the important thing is if you are engaging in therapy at the moment, it's best to do so online.
Yeah.
And there are also a kind of accredited boards like the Psychological Society of Ireland and the Irish Association for Counselling and Psychotherapy, where you could check up therapists and see if there's people available online. And there's a number of phone calls as well, such as Alone and the Samaritans, that you could ring up. They're available, I believe, 24/7. And I know the St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, they have an information line that's available, I believe, Monday to Friday during business hours, and that's manned by nurses. So they can give medical kind of guidance as well and give you kind of a steer in terms of where to go.
But do reach out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was mentioning to you off air, my wife Trish and I, we're creating online groups for this period of self-isolation and social distancing. And the idea is that we'll meet up for 30 minutes once a week on Wednesday evenings. And the idea is it's My Power Small. So it's around making tiny but powerful changes when everything feels too much. And we're taking a workshop that we delivered in person earlier on in the year, and we're kind of just breaking it down into bite-sized chunks so that people can come online. They'll kind of get a handout, they'll get a practice, and they'll get something to work with for the next week.
Great.
Just to help them to manage their anxiety a little bit more. So if anybody's interested, here, I'm talking over you, sorry Louise.
No, I was going to say, where can people find it? That's perfect.
So they can pop onto our website, which is www.mypowerofsmall.com.
So. Mypowerofsmall.com. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I think that's really practical and helpful advice for people at a very difficult time, it has to be said. So Aisling Leonard-Curtin, Chartered Psychologist and Co-Director of Act Now Purposeful Living, thank you so much for coming in.
Louise McSherry. Weekends from 9 on 2FM.